No. I mean, honestly, leaving the door open is probably not going to hurt anything for now.
No, it's okay. All right. Exactly, it's not like it was the vendor right over there. So.
Oh, there they are.
Hey, there's one.
2 hours of narrating.
We've been waiting just for you, TC. We're actually about to start, and then there you were. So.
Yeah. Well, not yet. Give it some time. Okay. Ready?
Yes.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Saturday. What's today's date?
My phone's August over there. August 16th.
August 16th, 2014.
Just like the regular show.
And you're listening to our Gen Con 2014 live show with a live studio audience. Say hi, live studio audience.
Hey! Building the Game podcast.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We've got a lot more people this year than we had last year, and people are still trickling in. Thanks for coming in, guys. This is super exciting. We didn't actually talk about what we were going to talk about, so I guess we never had that conversation.
It actually occurred to me as you were doing the intro, I was like, we didn't really lay out the structure for the show.
No, we didn't spend any time talking
we
about what
to talk
about.
We had some broad strokes, but no, we do this all the time. We know what we're doing, so yeah, it'll be good.
Sure. So how's Gen Con for you guys?
Woo! Fantastic!
Yeah? Yeah? See anything cool?
No?
It's just a big dud, huh?
Cat people.
Cat people?
It's too much to process. Give us a few days.
Yeah, okay, all right. What are some of your favorite games that you've seen for the first time this year?
Sheriff of Nottingham.
Sheriff of Nottingham. Step up to microphone if you're going to talk about it.
Yeah, do it.
Why is it cool?
I love Sheriff of Nottingham. It's my new favorite game.
Okay, this is...
Because you get to lie to your friends.
Okay.
And those are the best games.
Those are the best games when you lie. I love lying to my friends.
So, yeah, you take turns being the sheriff, and people have to, like, hide cards in the bag, and then you bribe each other, and... make deals, and deals are binding, and it's a really good time. I paid my friend, who was the sheriff, to look at somebody else's bag, because I knew they were lying and had all this contraband in it, or so I thought. They ended up not lying, and I screwed everybody over with just two little coins. It was the best experience ever. My other favorite game of the con was screwing over Chris Kopak in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So that's my experience so far. Screwing people over real bad.
And great. And dancing? And dancing?
And dancing.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, anybody else? Something good?
Well, I'm just going to step in here. For those who weren't, Andy didn't introduce himself.
So yeah.
That was Andy Lennox. He's probably familiar to listeners of the podcast. He's been on before. But yeah. He gave that same spiel like a couple days ago on his podcast, like to the word, minus the Kopak stuff. Hi, I'm Eric Handler at Reld Nasir. It's just Eric Handler backwards if you really care. I got to play Diamonds with Mike Fitzgerald Wednesday night, and that was just a ton of fun. It's a trick-taking game. It's pretty simple, easy to pick up. I think it's going to be difficult to master. It's got that six-player thing going for it, which is sometimes rare in trick-taking,
mm-hmm.
and you can also go up to partners, and so you can have three teams of two playing Diamonds, which is a nice thing for trick-taking.
Yeah, that's a cool twist on
that. That's so cool. Yeah. And teams, yeah.
Anybody else? Yeah, come on up.
Winter Tales by
Winter Tales.
Fantasy Flight.
Okay.
Picked it up because it looked like it was kind of low crunch in storytelling.
Uh-huh.
And it's really cool because it's got kind of a dark fairy tale vibe to it, sort of like that Alice in Wonderland game from a few years ago.
Yeah.
That McGee one. And what was really cool about it was one of the quests is you have to create a memory, and you have to do a series of those. And then they have these little tiny cards that were drawn by 3- and 5-year-olds with just scribbles on them.
Oh, nice.
And so basically everybody gets a stack
saves
of these
money on artwork.
Scribbles, right? Exactly. And then you're competing between two teams in the game to then create this memory. And then when you get done with everybody making up a story based on the scribbles in their hand, the person who wins... takes what they think is the most entertaining or interesting memory card out of everything that was played in that round, and then basically seals it as the round's card for who won.
Oh, cool.
So it's kind of cool. When I was reading through the rules, it was like, okay, what does this mean, a memory? Is that just a resource in the game? But no, it's actually a memory that the group created doing the storytelling portion of the game.
Cool.
That's interesting.
That's what I thought was pretty cool about it. There was a bit of crunch around it, but it was a storytelling game at its core.
That's cool.
Very cool.
Introduce yourself for us, by the way.
I'm Magnus Miller-Wilson. I'm an old friend of Jason's from Kalamazoo.
So true story.
We thought we'd come out and see what was going on.
Cool. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah. Well, we've been playing a lot of stuff. I finally got around. Just earlier today, I played the Phantom Society for the first time. I guess that was new last year, but I haven't had a chance to see it. I was really taken by the art on that. And finally had a chance to play it. I didn't know it was a deduction game, which I really am a big fan of those. We played two-player.
Yeah.
And that went pretty well. We liked that a lot.
It was cool. The board, if anybody's seen it, the board is actually cut out so you can place tiles into the board. And then there's a circle below that where you can hide tokens below those tiles.
It's like a two-layer game board with recessed cutouts, which is pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
I got to play Camel Up yesterday with some people in this very room, and it was a good time. I really liked it.
If I can pause for a minute, if the listeners can hear all the noise going on, the room's really shaking right now because we're in the Crown Plaza Hotel, and there are trains literally running above us.
Right. Thank you, Gen Con. Thanks for that.
For putting the podcast underneath the trains. Go on, though. Camel Up.
Yeah, Camel Up was a lot of fun. I thought about getting it last night. Decided, nah. And then I went to check it out today, and it was gone. So, oh well. That's what happens. I played it before, but I picked up Parade, and that is a ton of fun.
Parade is great, if you guys don't know it.
Yeah.
Z-Man. It's a real simple little box, little car game. It's just fantastic.
Yes. Good times. Got some interesting mechanics I haven't seen before, so I liked it a lot. I'm curious, we asked this last year, how many of you guys listen to the show? And it's okay if you don't. I'm just always curious the people who don't listen to the show who made it here. So,
yeah.
Andy, cool. I know you listen to the show, you liar.
Well, yeah, cool. What else? What else have we seen? I'm trying to remember what we bought. We bought Istanbul. Was pretty good. I don't know if anybody else played Istanbul. Not Constantinople. Haha, jokes.
It's not going to get any better than that, guys. That is as good as it gets.
Yeah. Matt almost walked down on us.
I tried two the new Cathala games, Longhorn, which was really fun and a nice two-player game, and then Naya, the guy was like, there's like 12 ways to pronounce it. I don't know. But it's basically Connect Four with a twist. And I got to try that a couple times. I picked it up. I actually tried it with Matt Loomis earlier. So I have not. I've seen him, but he was always demoing. So yeah, I saw that. Because you're TC.
And you said that nobody could possibly hear. So that was TC Petty just said he took a selfie with, for the listeners at home.
Yeah,
I have to point that out.
And today, Ben Pinchback is supposed to be getting Bruno to sign a statue of Bruno.
Yeah.
So, we'll see how that works.
We'll see. What else did we buy? I don't remember what else we bought. Oh, we picked up A Duel Betwixt Us. I don't know if you guys know that one. It's a two-player one. We got at Game Salute. It looks just kind of silly and lighthearted card game about two gentlemen having a dispute and resolving their dispute with a duel. And it looks goofy and super fun. So we're excited about that one.
My favorite thing you told me about that was the if you tie, there's no way to decide who the winner is. You should just shake hands and be done with it.
Right.
I thought that was great.
Yeah. It's funny.
It's very thematic. I mean, if
I
nothing
say
else,
it's
very
funny,
very
okay?
Thematic.
Even if you don't like it, it's funny.
It's hilarious. So, hey, you wanna pitch a game here?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what we do, right?
Let's do that. So, all right. So last year, we asked for components. And this year we thought we'd do something different. So this year we're going to ask for a name of a game name. Like, you guys come up with a fake name for a game, and then two mechanics. Now, to spice it up a little bit, the player who gives us the best name for the game will get a copy of Water Balloon Washout. So,
ooh.
Super exciting.
Ooh.
Super exciting. I know.
Yeah, so to start with, Let's get mechanics first. Give these guys some time to think of names. So if you have an idea for a mechanic, we're looking for two. Step up to Mike and tell us what mechanic you think we should use, and we'll pick our two favorites.
I think you should use cost amortization.
Cost amortization. That seems to be a crowd favorite.
Well played. Did you think of that yourself, or did you plagiarize that from someone?
That was totally plagiarized. You don't have to use that one.
Anybody else?
If we can use that one. Don't be shy. Come on,
don't
guys.
Don't be shy. Come on.
There are no wrong answers. They're just the ones we don't pick.
Yeah, I'll throw trick-taking out there because I had great luck with Chevy and trick-taking.
Trick-taking and cost amortization. Any others?
There really need to be some more.
We need at least two more. At least two more, please.
I'm going to start calling on people.
Nothing, huh? Crickets out there. There's here comes one more.
Seven or eight game designers out here. None of you want to give us a mechanic?
We're tired of it all.
Worker placement.
Worker placement. All right. Oh,
Michael.
Pop-O-Matic.
Pop-O-Matic.
See, ooh, that is good.
All right, here it comes.
Stacking.
Stacking.
Piece stacking.
I'm not a game designer, though, so I don't know.
That's okay.
Fancy terminology, but one of the things I like about Lords of Waterdeep is that if you use the expansion for Skullport, it has the corruption track, right? And so there's both the individual mechanic of taking corruption, mm-hmm. but the more the entire group takes the corruption, the worse the corruption gets at the end of the game.
That makes sense.
So it's like if three people take three of them, then nine of them being gone from the track is way worse than the individual three that each person takes.
That makes sense.
Some sort of like exponential or sliding scale.
Anybody
where you
know
have
of a
individual
name for that?
Choice, but it's got like a group component too.
Okay.
That kind of takes everybody down with it.
TC's the expert in the crowd. What would you call that?
What would I call that?
Yeah.
What mechanic is that?
I don't know. He was pretty close to the sliding scale, but I mean, it's
like group penalty.
It's playing chicken.
It is, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is a simple way to put it. Let's say
okay,
that.
Plain chicken. Got it. Oh, one, here comes another one.
I really like games that you cut the cake and then the other one chooses the pile that they want to take. I like that. It's like they cut the cake, cut the pie again.
I cut your shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. These are good choices.
We've got some good stuff here.
Yeah.
If anybody's got anything else, we'll take it. But otherwise, I think we can pick from this list.
Maybe we should have them choose based on applause.
Okay. But if you pick cost amortization, we're not going to be able to design a game.
You got
to
say it right. Amortization.
It doesn't matter. I don't know how to do that, and I guarantee Rob doesn't. So
we'll make it up.
So, yeah, okay. So cost amortization.
By applause. Nothing? All right.
Okay. Trick taking. Worker placement. Pop-O-Matic.
Well, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Stacking.
So no stacking.
Playing chicken.
That's pretty good.
And cut the cake / cut the pie.
Ooh, that's close.
It's pretty strong for those.
I think Pop-O-Matic is pretty clear. Playing chicken or cut the pie. All right, well, let's do all three.
Let's do three.
All right, all three. Okay.
So that, those two do kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cut the chicken.
Uh-oh.
Cut the chicken.
Wait. We've got cut the pie. Chicken and a Pop-O-Matic?
Yep.
Chicken pop pie.
Oh!
That I'm going to put that down as your game name suggestion.
Yeah. Can anyone do better than that?
Oh, no.
No?
That was... Wow.
That's pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Chicken
so,
pop pie.
Anybody else want to give it a try?
No, if nobody else wants to get into the game, I think we have a winner. Free copy water balloon washout.
All right, here you go, sir.
And with that, you get a free copy of Concrud.
Yay! So Concrud is a game that Jason... Well, Jason Tagmeyer, why don't you come up here to Mike, explain Concrud to everyone.
Concrud is a one-card convention game. The goal of the game is to not leave the convention with Concrud. So to give it to somebody when shaking hands or slipping in someone's game, anything like that, no. and nobody will come anywhere near me because I think I have so much Concrud. But yeah, that's it.
Awesome. I left Origins with two copies of Concrud.
You're very awful. Devious about it, too.
Yeah.
Somebody in this room has one in a copy of a game that they're taking home and they don't know, hopefully.
Whoa. Yeah.
It's true. I was there when you did it.
That's awesome.
So
that's awesome. Okay.
Awesome. So we're going to be designing a game here on the fly called Chicken Pot Pie. I don't think we can come up with a better name ever than that.
That's great.
That is the best name ever. It's going to include Pop-O-Matic, a Pop-O-Matic bubble, a playing chicken, and the cut the pie mechanic. So, yeah. All right, Rob, take it away.
Okay. Hate you. Let's see. So I think the hardest thing here is going to be... So cut the pie. Cut the pie. We need something to be separating, right? It's separating into separate piles, and the other person does not know what is in that pile. That's the idea. Am I grasping that correctly?
Well, they can know, but it's like I cut, you choose.
So okay.
I make two piles.
Okay.
But you get to pick which one you want.
Got it. Okay. So I think... it's too bad there's no way we can cut the dice that are in the Pop-O-Matic bubble. Or I guess there's only one die in a Pop-O-Matic bubble. No, there could be more, right? Two?
There's at least one. It doesn't have to be a die either.
Can we have like 12 dice in the Pop-O-Matic bubble? There's at least two? Okay. Could we have two Pop-O-Matic bubbles?
Well, what if the Pop-O-Matic bubble was a chicken pot pie?
The whole thing is styled to look like that, yes.
Right, the whole board.
And so of course.
You're playing on top of the game board, but underneath that layer, it's the chicken pot pie.
There's
that's
actually,
the dice.
There's a real chicken pot pie?
No, yes. Free with every game. Well, they did that already with the pie for Pie Factory at Unpub. So, yeah, they were giving away free pies.
Well, here's what I'm thinking.
So, no. Shut up. I've got an idea here. Gosh, you're terrible. So the game board is a board, and then underneath it, it's the pie with the Pop-O-Matic bubble. That's filled with 12 dice, like you want. So you actually pop the whole game board.
The reason board is popped.
Yeah, because then you're playing chicken.
Then your pieces go everywhere.
Will they, or are you playing chicken that maybe they will, maybe they won't?
Ah, that's a mess. That's a mess. That's terrible. No. All right. I think this is a two-player game because you need two different Pop-O-Matic bubbles, okay, that you can open up. All right, and you have 12 dice, and player one decides how many dice are going to go in each Pop-O-Matic bubble. Player two then pops them. Well, he chooses one to pop, and he pops that, and he gets those numbers. Okay, and then player one gets to pop the other one. How about that?
Okay,
is that good splitting?
Yeah, I mean, I think what determines which one I'm going to pick? Do I maybe get to know the number of dice that are in there, but not the type of dice?
Sure. Okay, it could be numbers on the colors, type of dice. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about that.
So you can have several different kinds of dice in known quantities. So if I tell you if there's 12 dice total and there are four types, three each, and I tell you that there are seven dice in there, you know that there's at least one of every type and at least two of some types, but you don't know how many of each type.
Okay.
So assuming some dice have to be greater than other dice, that's kind of makes sense. Like I would say three levels of, there's four, so four levels of dice. If you were going to use those as regular D6s, it could be like the first level is like 0, 0, 1, 1, 2, 2.
Sure. And those would all be green, and the next one would be scale higher, and it would be red, so you could easily tell them apart at a glance. I think that works. Okay. So that's what kind of dice we have here. We're splitting up however we want. Okay, what are we going to do with the results that are rolled on that, on those dice?
Play chicken. Duh.
Okay, and how does that work?
I thought that was your job. So play chicken. So we're not using a pot pie board because that's preposterous. So
it is.
But there has to be a board, and we have to be moving things towards each other. Now, I don't think actual chickens have to move towards each other. Maybe chicken pot pies are your icons.
What if one of us is the butcher and the other is the chicken? And you have to get... And whoever's going to get closer, once you hit... No, maybe in the center of the board is the butcher, and the two chickens are coming at each other. And when they hit, that means they hit the butcher, and they want to wait and see who can get closer.
Yeah, that's a fairly grotesque ending, but I'll go with that. I mean, kind of sucks for the chicken.
So it's how far up the track are you going to go?
Right.
When you do the pop, and the dice say, how far are you going to go up the track? And then you either take it and you go for it, or you chicken out. But you have to both go for it at the same time, don't you? Oh, no, here's what it is. Okay, so the one guy splits up the dice, right? The other guy picks, and then you have to decide if you're going to pop or not. Because if you pop, you have to go.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
And if you choose, no, I'm not going to pop, then the other guy wins that round, basically.
Okay, yeah. So there's multiple rounds.
Yeah, and so it's played in, I don't know, five rounds, whatever. It's a fast game. It's a filler game. You know, two-player filler game.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that just feels so simple.
It does. Hey, simple's okay.
Yeah, but we just did that really fast.
Yeah, we need to fill
some more time. So last year what happened was the pitch took like forever because they gave
stumped.
Us the worst components that we could ever think of. And it was, for those of you who were there, you know, it took like 40 minutes to figure out how to pitch the game. Mm-hmm. It was a train wreck, much like above us right now. Sounds like they've actually cleared a little bit. I saw a hand raised.
Yeah.
Yes, you want to?
I was just going to say for the sliding scale, what if...
There's no sliding scale.
The closer you got to the butcher in the middle, the faster both conveyors went.
Oh.
The more points you scored.
Oh.
Yeah, because we actually didn't include anything about the sliding scale thing. We kind of used
right.
that. Yeah, so we called that playing chicken, but yeah. No, that's good. So maybe you're on conveyor belts. So it's not even a butcher. You could just be moving towards the chicken-o-matic that's going to turn you into a chicken pie, right?
The whirring blades. Yeah. You guys have any more ideas? Because
that was good. That was really good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Come on up. Add. Contribute.
So what if the dice represented the ingredients for the chicken pot pie? So like carrots and peas and celery and stuff like that. And so as first player, you're deciding which the ingredients are going to be in which set. And then that can contribute to the quality of the chicken pot pie that you are about to become.
You want to be okay. Eaten or not?
Well, maybe you do want to be eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you're trying to turn your opponent into a pie.
to turn your opponent into a pie.
I mean, we were talking about it as if we were the chickens.
Right, that's a good point.
What if it...
Yeah, come on up.
Could still be the chickens, but you could be throwing ingredients at the other one, making them slip on the conveyor belt.
Yeah, the ingredients certainly.
Oh.
So
I'm a chicken. You're a chicken. There's the center. Hey, have a carrot.
Oh yeah. Okay, so you're rolling the ingredients, and each ingredient is gonna have some effect.
Yeah.
Okay, and some of the ingredients might allow them to get more grip, so they can run back.
Yep. And others could be pulling. Yeah.
Potatoes heavier, so it's gonna hurt a lot more.
Yeah.
And
carrots
that could
a lot
actually
more slender. It's gonna fly farther.
Right.
Not do as much.
And that could actually work with the colors of the dice, because you know Chris suggested that the dice meant that you could sell the numbers on the dice, but the orange is carrots, green is peas, potato could be white, and then one more vegetable. What?
Pickles.
Wait, did you say tomato?
Yes.
I don't think tomatoes are pot pie.
Corn.
Yes. Just throw the whole cob at them.
Yeah.
I still want to throw pickles.
Oh, that hurts, Andy. That hurts.
It hurts. Okay. All right. Well, that automatically is better. It's already better.
This
feels a lot better.
Good job, guys. This is why we have you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
So are we. Actually, just another day. Okay, so we've got our two Pop-O-Matic bubbles, the dice in there, each colored die, not the plural form, it represents a different kind of vegetable, which has a different effect, and then the number is how far it's going to go across to the other end of the conveyor belt, or how much...
And whether or not it will pull you with it.
Yeah.
So I would say that peas are definitely something that pulls you in because they're slippery. Carrots should be a projectile that you can throw at your opponent because those are like darts, right? You know, uncooked carrots. I mean, that's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Or frisbees if they were cut into little things. Mm-hmm.
But we need to make sure we get this. That's funny.
Carrots, don't
cut your eyes. So we need to make sure that we get this the sliding scale thing in here where it escalates. So as they as they're both getting closer,
mm-hmm.
or is it every round we have to get closer, or is it maybe there are like switches that we hit as we come through?
Well, there could be just a risk reward of the closer you get, the faster you move.
Okay.
Because maybe it's separate conveyor belts. And it doesn't easier, have to be
yeah,
one big
that's
conveyor.
True. The easier it's going to be to hit the other guy who's coming from the opposite direction, maybe?
Right. So okay. It's easier to hit him, but it's also easier to fall into the whirling blades of death, which sucks.
Yeah.
What if the number of dice, you know, you were able to do more actions with it, but then that pushed you farther along the conveyor belt? So it's a risk-reward of,
right.
Do I roll smaller amounts of dice and hope I get more powerful ones.
Mm-hmm. We're popping these dice, remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they roll in the pop. Okay. Sorry. We're popping the dice.
Pop-a-matic.
But if you go for the one that has more dice in it, you're more likely to get pushed farther along the conveyor belt. I don't know how using the dice powers push you along. That's your guys' job.
So you're going to pop the die, and then you have more options. If you have more dice in your bubble, you have more options. But every time you use a die, you're going to have to move one space closer.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what the conveyor belt sounds like.
Yeah.
Is
once
it
again.
One space forward, or is it the sections that you've been talking about? So if you're in that far section, you move one.
You know,
it
might be cool if there were
two.
Sections.
I think there's like three sections of conveyor belt that go three different speeds.
Spaces on each.
Right, and then there's three or four spaces on each section.
But your speed, if you use a die, is which section you're on. So if you use a die in section two, you go further than if you're all the way at the back.
Right.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct, yeah. Yeah, I think the speeds could pretty much just escalate in a normal. But maybe thinking back to what Magnus originally said, that it depends not just where I am, but where you are. So if your chicken is closer and mine is closer, then they're multiplied.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
So
closer
if
closer to your mic.
Sorry.
You've done this before, haven't you?
Yep. Normally we don't sit at this table like this.
Well, we still. Well, anyway. We don't need to bicker.
Very difficult. Why they're used to it. I mean, that's what we normally do on the show. So if I'm in conveyor belt one and you're on conveyor belt two, doesn't do much. But once I'm on three and you're on three, or I'm on three and you're on four, that combination makes it go a lot faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. That's what I was saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right.
Anybody else have any more comments?
Any publishers in the audience? No? Chicken pot pie. Fair point.
We're all getting chicken pot pie after this, right?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. maybe at the restaurant
podcast.
Upstairs. We won't be there, but you guys are welcome. And yeah, pretty sure Andy said he would pick up the tab. So Andy's a nice guy. Super generous.
Cool. All right. I think that's a pretty good game.
So
chicken
yeah.
pot pie. Yay!
So,
thanks, guys.
Let's talk about some other stuff.
What else do we have to talk about, Jason?
Well, first of all, we do this on the show a lot. We like to take questions that you guys send in to us. And as a reminder, we now have a telephone number you can call us at and leave messages. How awesome is that, right?
Yeah. Can you play the? We've gotten one call so far, right? Can you play it into the mic? Can you access it on your phone?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Nobody
we...
else is going to be able to hear it though.
Well, they can all, if you put it on your phone, on the speakerphone.
We can
let's give it a
that.
Shot.
Let's try.
Let's give it a shot.
So our phone number is 770-TEL-BTG, and you call that, it goes to our Google Voice voicemail, and then we play it on the show. And we may edit it to make you sound stupid, especially if you're Andy.
Picking on
again,
Andy today.
Andy's easy to pick on because he's just sitting there staring at me, smiling, so... And I feel comfortable making fun of him because he makes fun of me too. So, yeah, we get our first message from someone who's not here, and that is our friend Shu, who we've gotten questions before from.
On this podcast, brought to you by trains. They're everywhere.
I heard you guys mention here on the last episode, and I wanted to chime in on that. And since you have this new cool Google Voice thing, I thought I would talk to you a lot.
That sounds terrible.
So Heroes Wanted looks actually super cool. I kickstarted it at a very high level to make sure I got all the add-ins.
That was a real bad idea.
So Shu, if you're listening to this, we're sorry. We will put you on the next episode in a way that does not sound so terrible.
We'll do it right next time. All right. So do you guys have any questions?
Hey, I have a game that I'm working on.
Uh-huh.
And it plays completely different from two-player to three-player. And then four-player, like each way is different, and some are really bad, and some are good. What do you guys do in situations like that?
You basically design three different games using the same components?
I just added another player, and then it got not as good.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, at that point, maybe you have to ask yourself, is it meant to just be a two-player game? I mean, there are some games that are meant to only be... In fact, just yesterday, you told me that the game No Thanks is amazing, even though it requires three or more players. So maybe if your game is only two players, it's okay. You said with two, it's good. With three, it's bad. And with four, it's...
It's good again.
Oh, okay.
Is your game called The Bedroom?
I do have a game.
So that's an interesting thing. I know I've experienced that before as a designer, where the three-player version is not as balanced as the four would be.
So it's not that it doesn't work.
Like, do you think it's okay to have special case rules
for three-player?
For each player count?
Like, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
As long as they're not too, like, it's a totally, totally different game.
It's a little bit different.
So you could market it as that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, big-name publishers have... stuff printed on the board for two or three players start here, for three or four or five players start here, you know, I mean, whatever.
Well, how far would you go to make it work? What if the rules you add make the play experience fundamentally different?
That's interesting, because you and I have talked about that before, where one we talked about before is King of Tokyo, which is interesting because they actually have 5 to 6 players printed right on the board, which I always thought was kind of weird because most of the time you're not playing with 5 to 6 players.
But I think you say 2 to 6.
There's 5 to 6, like the extra spot.
Oh, okay.
King of Tokyo, there's the Tokyo Bay, and then there's Tokyo City.
Got it.
And that's a game where it's a very, very different game with two players, I feel like, at least. And I know Rob agrees.
I don't like it with two.
Yeah.
I think it's a terrible game with two.
Than it is with four players.
Yeah.
I like it with two. I just feel like it's a completely different game.
So do you think you should just, like, the one that's the experience that's not as good, do you think you should just cut it, or should you include it?
So what you're going to say, a game for even-numbered players.
Well, there are games that are two or four players. Sure, that happens.
Has anybody else seen that before? Have you seen that?
I've seen that, yeah.
I don't know if I've seen it on published games, but I'm working on a game where we definitely had that problem, where we went from the two-player experience and we said, could this work with three? And mathematically, it just doesn't work. So I'd ask Andy, is it a math problem, or is it just is it something that boils down to the math of the game, or is it something more along the lines of just the play experience?
I think if I knew, I would fix it all.
So we're taking volunteers to play Andy's prototype after this. Yeah.
Matt's got you.
No, generally speaking, like
what Matt is good with math.
Yeah.
So,
I am good with math. Generally speaking, what you're talking about is scaling. So, like King of Tokyo scales 5 to 6 players. You need that extra spot just because otherwise you only have one monster in the center.
Right.
You're gonna have 5 players that are gonna get to attack that guy. When you reduce that to 4, you have 2 monsters, etc. Like you're gonna get people in and out. So a 2 or 4 player game is going to be less, usually that's like part, you think of partnership games at that point.
Yeah.
Usually games that have 2 or 4 are really 2-player games that can play 4-player partnerships.
Right.
So a game, to me, a game, if it went, was a totally, or even like maybe 50% of a different game from 2, 3, and 4, there's something fundamentally wrong there. I mean, I'd have to look at Andy's game in specifics to see like what is going wrong, but generally... I mean, adding number of players, you're just having scaling issues. Unless, I mean, the other problem that I've seen is not going below 3 players if it's like a deduction game where you're trying to do something between 2 players and it's, you know, bad at that point. So,
Andy, is it a team game? Is that why it's that balanced?
No.
I'm kidding. It was not a serious question. Thank you, Matt. But yeah, I would say one of the best things you could do is have a lot of people playtest it with three and with two or with three and four, like, because you could play in the four player and then just sit out and watch them play three player. And who knows, maybe they'll be like, wow, this three player game is awesome. The other one's terrible. So just make it for three players. My goal.
You asked about examples of games that are made for even numbers of players.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and Gentlemen is like that.
Yes.
There is a pair of a lady and a gentleman, and they have a special rule for if you have an odd number of players, there is now a new player type, which completely changes the game and makes it reportedly inferior.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
So the answer is cut the one that sucks.
You mean you could also, you know, market it as a two or four player game with a special three player variant.
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously you want to highlight that because there's nothing worse than seeing a game that says it's two to four players, and I know you've experienced this specifically, Rob.
Yeah.
And you buy it, and because you and Christine mostly play two player games together because you have no friends.
Listeners know I like two player games.
But anyways, yeah.
Everybody missed that dig, by the way.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was bummed. I said, because you have no friends. But that's not true. There's me. But we never play games together. So nope. Anyways, and you've been burned by that, where you play a game, you're like, this is great. And then you buy it, and you play it with two players, and like, this is not fun anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's too bad.
Yeah.
So I've seen before on some games where they'll have two to four players, best with four. And I always think that's admirable because you're telling people, hey, if you're just two players, maybe don't buy this game,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is cool. But then it also feels like you want the game to just be good with all of them, you know? So
yeah. Yeah, that's why I haven't bought King of Tokyo because two players, I just don't like it at all. It's boring. But anyway, four players, great. Other questions?
I'm just going to take advantage of the fact that I'm sitting right next to the mic.
Sure.
You said best with four on the outside of the box is really cool. What other information do you think is really cool on the outside of a box that isn't always there?
Ooh, that's not always there. Because there's always number of players, ages, time. That's pretty common.
You know, as a designer, one of the coolest things to see on the outside of the box would just be a list of the main mechanics of the game. That would be great.
Have you?
Like, I mean, you can have it like, this is a trick-taking game that, you know, mm-hmm. but like, you don't always see that. So that would be kind of cool. I think that would be fun because there are certain mechanics where certainly some of us are drawn to and ones that we don't like. One of the ones I struggle with that I've talked about on the show before is real time. With some games with real time, with real time multiplayer, I have a hard time with. But most games that are real time will say they are real time on the outside of the box. And if it says real time and it's four players, then I know it's not for me because I know that I'll just be last place every time and my brain will melt. So, yes, sir.
I would say to answer Eric's question, components, picture of the components on the back of the box.
That is always nice.
Super important.
When it's not there, you look at the back of the box, you get no information. I mean, outside of a card game, you can have a number of cards, you know what cards look like. But otherwise,
right.
Seeing the game set up or what components are going to come mm-hmm. in the box should be there.
And it can be, sometimes it's okay when it's different, but like Phantom Society is a good example. Rob bought it, I didn't. I thought it was fun, but it was not the game I expected it to be based on what I saw in the box.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw in the box, I expected it to be that I would have these little characters running around this mansion doing stuff. And instead, it's a deduction game. And it's a cool deduction game, but it's not what I expected. And had the pictures on the box been more clear, I would have known that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these characters, you don't even use them in the main version of the game. It's like it's the master version of the game. So, I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of, that was kind of misleading. And I was kind of bummed about that. But the game was still super fun. Mm-hmm. I just knew that it wasn't for me because of that, because I mm-hmm. expected a different game. And I'll still play it with you guys and have a great time, but I won't play it on my own that often. Yeah. So
I know this is actually a terrible idea, especially from a marketing point of view, but I would really like the back of the box to take me through a round of the game, like one turn or something, you know, so that I can read that and I can look at the picture of those components and I can get, just from reading that at a glance, I can get maybe a picture of how the game plays a little bit. It's a terrible idea because no publisher would ever actually do that.
Well, it's not completely untrue. Van Ryder Games, who I'm a big fan of, for those of you who've heard. Goodbye, Jason Tagmeyer. We'll miss you. Are you offended? Why are you leaving? I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. He tweeted me earlier while sitting there to tell me that he was going to leave, so I just wanted to embarrass him while he was leaving. Payback for all the con crud. Van Ryder Games, whose plug is publishing my game, but anyways, they like to put QR codes on the back of some of their games with playthrough videos.
Mm-hmm. That's actually
smart.
That's
such a cool idea.
Yeah.
Just take, you know, use your phone to look
a
at that.
QR code takes up like almost no real estate versus my suggestion.
Right. Yeah. So that, I think that's, and it's so much more visual that way anyways than trying to read through a round.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm super lazy when it comes to reading rules. So if I could just watch it play,
he's really bad at
it
too. We sat down to try and play Pagoda yesterday, and the people at the AEG booth didn't have time for us. And so we sat down, and Jason's like, fine, I'll just read the rules myself. Based on that gameplay, that game is terrible.
Has anybody else played Pagoda? Because I've heard it's a really good game.
I've heard it's great.
I felt like it was should be fun, but I felt like the rules were really written poorly.
I think it's
but
just that Jason was reading them.
It could be just me. Nobody? Nobody? Bueller?
Mixed things.
Mixed things?
Yeah.
If you want to schedule time with Eric and myself, we'll go ahead and read the rules for you.
And then teach us? That sounds good.
Jason Tagmeyer just tweeted me and said, I'm sorry, I should have said I have to catch a train. I'll let him know later that got a big laugh.
I have kind of a follow-up question on the contents of the box or what's on the box.
Yeah.
What is your position on shelf space issues?
Where oh, man.
That's a good one.
That's, you know, a good-sized box. You open it up and there's...
Yeah,
4 inches of cardboard filler around just a single deck of cards.
You know what's even more annoying than that? When there's not any, come on in. When there's not any cardboard filler, it's just loose cards in the box. And there's a publisher that does this a lot, and they make really good games. But unfortunately, they tend to. I think they're trying to look for real estate on the shelf.
Yeah, well, that's why they do, right? Because a bigger box, you can charge more money for it. You get more space on the shelf. It's more visible. That's why you put it in a big box, naturally. But, I mean, me, as I'm sure many of us, we have a lot of games in our cabinets, in our cupboards, in our shelves, and we don't want a box that's this big for a game that should be this big, you know? And that drives me crazy. I want the game to fit in the box and there be, like, absolutely no air in that box.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and that's... You know, that you're actually a good person to bring that up, Chris, because Chris has this kind of pack of games he brings with him to conventions. Mm-hmm. And he's mostly, even the ones that have fitting boxes, strips them out of their boxes and condenses them. You usually have the rules downloaded to your iPad. It's a pretty awesome system to where you have like four boxes that are like this big and you have like 20 games with you at all times. It's awesome.
Yeah, but I know because this reads real well on a podcast. This motion with my hands.
I'm really
Jason's good at that. Yeah. It's like his first time.
Hey, I do that on almost every podcast. It's yay big. So, but no, a small box size for a game. Because I know one of the culprits is Las Vegas is not great for that. Like that box is probably bigger than it needs to be.
Actually, one of the worst I've seen so far is Seventh Hero from AEG. And that's the one I was describing. It's, you know, I don't know the dimensions of the box, but you open it up and it's literally just 4 inches of cardboard surrounding a single deck of cards.
That's terrible. Yeah,
that's shameful.
What do they charge for it?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah,
but I mean, and to your point, yeah, I get it. You need to be able to catch people's eyes, but. As consumers, what are we supposed to do with all this? I mean, are we really supposed to carry this box around for this deck of cards?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, good news is we know you won't because you're smarter than that. So you'll just...
I like it when that happens because as a person with a lot of prototypes, I can put that box and jam a prototype in it.
Yeah, we were talking about playing Parade earlier. To the point of putting a picture on the box... I never in a million years would have bought Parade because it's a purple box and it says Parade on it and there's black text in the back. And that's it. There's not a single picture. And that makes me insane. The only reason that I play the game is because somebody else sat down, put it in front of me and said, hey, we're going to play this now and it's a good game. And I'm like, okay, I guess so. Yeah.
Same with me. I bought it because you showed me the game and I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
And I went and bought it.
So, yeah. Gosh, packaging is so important.
That's
it's
one
so
of the
important.
Things that... publishers on Kickstarter have gotten really good about, especially the good publishers, about showing the components, right? Like showing the entire, here's a picture layout of everything that comes in the box. And I think that's just great because it's very transparent. And I think it helps you as a consumer know what you're getting into.
Yep. Other questions? Or comments? Complaints? Come on up.
A spin-off of the previous question, but I've seen a few things on Board Game Geek
where they're doing box modding. So, like, if you've got all of this cardboard in there and you want to save some real estate and there's expansions coming out, you can take some foam core board, or some people even use wood if they've got a lot of the equipment to do that, to, you know, build a better layout for the pieces in there. Yeah, and that's one of the big gripes I have with Lords of Waterdeep right now is that, you know, I've got these big boxes, but what I want are cups for the meeples that I can take out and put on the table.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I'm just wondering if there's a good way to do that, or if there's a good place to go for seeing the box mods that people have done. Has anybody here done that?
Yeah, I haven't seen that, but you guys.
Rob's insert here to me is really good. He's got Lords of Waterdeep. He put the whole thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that stuff on Kickstarter before.
Is there something on BGG I see advertised called Broken Token or something like that? Or they make like wood inserts that are like fancy and stuff, but.
Yeah. Yeah, Broken Token. I don't know if that's actually the right tech, but there is. I think it is, where they're doing some wood kind of inserts. They've only done a couple games so far, like Smash Up and Giga Tokyo. But there's also another company that I just saw here. They didn't have a booth, but they're doing vac formed inserts, specialty inserts for game boxes. They started with Euphoria, which has a ton of components, and it's just like a specialized insert that holds all the pieces, easy to take out, but removable trays, but also closable trays, and it's like 50 mil plastic sheeting that is actually vac formed. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, they make the mold and everything. It's really specialized, but you know, it's upgrading your game. You know, spending another $25 on an insert, a $70 game. You know,
you've got to really love that game.
You've got to really love that game, but you know,
and if it's like, but it's a game you play all the time, it's probably worth it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But so it's there, and they're game trays, right? Exactly, with a Z at the end.
Game trays.
Game trays.
Trays. Right on. Can I complain for a minute about the Small World box and getting those little tiles out of those? It hurts. Like, I have to turn the whole thing over and dump it out, you know? I hate that so much.
You gotta bleed for your fun.
Yeah. Bleed for my fun, right.
It just came with, like, a pry bar. That's what it should come with, little crowbar.
It should have, like a nail file to pop those things out or something. Yeah. What else you guys got? Comments, questions, suggestions? Complaints?
All right.
You hungry? Pot pie time?
Oh, no.
Oh, here comes one.
First, I thought he was just getting up to leave.
I've got this friend who thinks this game is good with 2 to 4 players, but it's actually really bad, but it's really good with 3. How do I tell him that?
I think I know who you're talking about. He does not take feedback very well, so I wouldn't even bother.
Flip the table. Same rules!
Okay, so what else? What's happening tonight? Anybody doing anything fun tonight? Saturday night, Gen Con. What's on the agenda?
Playtesting.
Hey, that's good.
Yep. Say again?
Unpub forever.
Unpub forever.
Yeah.
Woo!
Unpub for life.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good advertisement. We.
No, I mean, I'm going to use the Unpub system for
there it is.
But that was a good. That was good.
Yeah, we've been hanging out at the Green Tables in Hall D.
Yep,
in
the
evenings
blue noodle.
With the blue noodle. We actually didn't make it over the last night. But tonight we will definitely be there testing some prototypes and stuff and playing whatever we can. So that'll be fun if you guys want to come and hang out.
We'll have some of our protos. We're happy
sure
to play
other
people's
around.
Protos too.
So, yep. Matt's got us. Okay.
Yeah, we'd love to play other guys' protos and stuff.
Only
so.
Matt has one.
Yeah.
Only Matt? Okay. All right, just come play Matt's and then leave.
I've only ever played one of Matt's protos, and I just want to tell this story because it was fun. It was last year at Gen Con. It was... the best thing or something, or the very best thing, or...
Oh, that game's...
I just remember it was a fun game. I just remember that I smoked you, like, 3 times in a row. And you're like, how are you doing that? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just apparently a savant at this game. I'm like, I don't even have feedback. Don't change a thing. Apparently, I should just start playing tournaments of this game.
Okay. Well, if nobody's got anything else, I guess that's going to do it for us. If you guys want to hang around and record some promos for us, that would be awesome. No obligation.
So if you listen to the show, you know that we have the intros, but then we also have our outros that we do, and that's Rob and I talking. Like, this is the Boo in the Game podcast, blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of lame. we would like to use you guys' voices instead for that, because that would be a lot less lame than our voices.
Yes.
So,
all right.
I just have to comment on this suggestion. This is the best place to get, you know, sound clips after we've all been at a convention for 3 days. Our voices sound like crap. Good job.
Yeah, we're listening to the Building the Game podcast. Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can get it with the train in the background too, just to make it
that
extra good.
That's what I thought you were
going
to say.
Yeah. Train going
chugga, 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 woo, woo. And Jason's cough.
Yeah, if anybody listens to the show, you know that Rob's always complaining about me coughing, so normally I'm not actually this bad. Not quite.
Yeah, you are.
No, it's the fact that I've got probably lots of con crud, so we'll just blame Tagmeyer. So, yeah.
Yeah, so cool. Well, hey, thanks for coming out, guys. We really appreciate it. We've got some dice up here if you want to come grab some. Yep. Yeah, so thanks for coming.
Or, if you want copies of Water Balloon Washout, I have them. So that's
so
cool.
That's another thing that he has. Yeah. I'm not selling you anything. So thanks for coming. Have a good rest of the con. Woo! Woo! Yay!
Just clapping for yourself there?
That clapping for the good. Audience.
I felt like you were clapping for yourself.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.